Welcome back to the program. Listening to the current Republican candidates, you would think that the 8 years of the Bush-Cheney administration had never happened. There's no mention, no embrace, not even an acknowledgement. And it's not surprising why. The administration drove us into the worst economic crisis since the Great Depression, ran up staggering deficits and engaged in dishonest accounting, engaged in a war of choice in which it declared victory at the war's perigee. And if that all isn't enough, it violated the rule of law. That's what we're going to talk about today with a woman who truly understands the role of the rule of law in the White House. She is Elizabeth Holtzman. She's the youngest woman ever elected to the U.S. Congress. She won national attention for her role in the House Judiciary Committee during the Watergate hearings and was subsequently elected District Attorney of Kings County, New York. She's a Harvard Law School graduate, a practicing lawyer, and the co-author of a new book entitled Cheating Justice: How Bush and Cheney Attacked the Rule of Law and Plotted to Avoid Prosecution and What We Can Do About It. Elizabeth Holtzman, thanks so much for joining us.
Well, it's great to be with you. Thank you so much, and thanks to your audience for listening.
And great to have you here. When we look at what went on during the Bush and Cheney administration, particularly with respect to the rule of law and some of the things we'll talk about here this morning, should we be looking at it from the point of view of trying to make sure that it doesn't happen again, learn from that experience, or should we be actually going after the perpetrators?
Well, in my view, having been a district attorney, one of the reasons that we prosecute people is to vindicate a sense of justice, a way of saying you did something really bad and we're going to punish you for it. And it also achieves a second purpose. By punishment, we send a signal that this conduct is unacceptable and we hope to deter it in the future. You can't deter misconduct in the future if you don't punish the bad conduct that takes place now, because you've sent a signal that this conduct isn't so bad after all, and so maybe I can get away with it in the future. So you can't really separate those out and say, now we're just going to live with the bad stuff.
Of course,
I don't think so.
Of course, in the larger Democratic context, there is the issue of how it impacts the country and whether or not it's worth the political risk.
Well, I don't know what the political risk is. I mean, I lived through Watergate, and when we began the impeachment proceedings, we did so in the House of Representatives. I was on the House Judiciary Committee because the American people demanded it. And everybody said that the country could never withstand an impeachment, that this would tear the country apart, that everybody would be split. It was, I mean, every parade of horribles was trotted out to say we shouldn't do it. And in the end, when the committee voted for the impeachment, we had the respect of the United States. The American people saw what we were doing and how we did it, and that it was bipartisan, and they supported it overwhelmingly. I mean, and this is for a man, Richard Nixon, won in one of the largest electoral landslides in the U.S. history in 1972. And by 1974, the American people were ready to say the rule of law is more important than any person. So I don't think there's political fallout, maybe on the margins, when you do something in the right way, when you follow the rule of law. I mean, I think the best example is the anger and cynicism that occurred when the banksters weren't being prosecuted. And President Obama just recently realized that and appointed a new strengthened unit to handle the investigation and possible prosecution of the banksters. Well, he wouldn't be doing that if the American people weren't demanding a kind of justice, and not just exposure of all the wrong things. We know a lot of the wrong things that happened. What they want is justice, and they want it to punish, and they want it also to send a signal, never again.
Of course, the banks are still there. They're still operating. They're still part of the financial system. Bush and Cheney are essentially gone.
Right, but we could have...
Go ahead.
But there could be another Bush or another Cheney in the future. There's no question about that.
Let's talk a little bit about what actually went on. Certainly, this is not the first administration to lie or stretch the truth to the American people to engage in war. Let's start with that.
Yes, and my co-author and I went through this very carefully and did a lot of research. Obviously, there's a lot of puffing that goes on, a lot of exaggeration in the political process and in governing, and there are lies. But where do you draw the line? You draw the line, at the very least, where there's a criminal statute. And that's what we looked at. We looked at criminal laws in three areas. One is the deceptions in connection with taking us to war in Iraq. The second was the illegal wiretapping. And the third was the torture and mistreatment of detainees. And we took a look at the existing criminal statutes to see whether they were applicable. Two of the three statutes that were applicable in terms of dishonesty or false statements or fraud, we felt were not applicable. But we did feel that the law, Section 371, conspiracy to defraud the Congress, does apply in this case. And actually, it's a law that was used in Watergate, and it was a law that was used to prosecute Nixon's top aides for deception of the Congress. So we're not taking out a brand new law and using it in a brand new way. This law has been used to counter corruption and deceit by high officials in the past. So we looked at the defenses. For example, statute of limitations, is it too late to bring the prosecution? Statute of limitations is running on this and also running in a number of other areas. So that's a very big concern if we want to hold people accountable for lying. I think that defrauding Congress over a war, and this actually came about in a very technical way because President Bush had to submit a document to the Congress attesting to the existence of certain conditions, because it was the existence of those conditions that gave him the authority to go to war. And those conditions were that the war was against someone who had planned or aided or assisted the attacks of 9/11. Well, he knew, and we know, that Saddam Hussein had nothing to do with assisting in the attacks of 9/11. And so that statement to the Congress, made in writing, is a false statement and is a prosecutable statement in our view. Now, I just want to say, having been a prosecutor, there's a far cry from looking at a statute on its face and looking at some of the evidence on its face and saying there's a crime that's committed. We don't know all the facts. We're just going from the public record. So obviously you need to have a very fair, a very competent prosecutor examine the statute and examine the law and determine whether, as we believe, there's a prima facie case to prosecute. But the war in Iraq was so serious. It cost us $1 trillion in money. It cost us terrible loss of life and loss of limb and injury to tens of thousands of American soldiers. The destruction in Iraq is huge, and we're still paying the cost of that, and our children will pay the cost of that, and children's children will pay the cost of that. And we do not want presidents to drive us into war, given the cost and given the consequences, by lies.
What about the role of historical precedent in this, in terms of other presidents that have done similar things in terms of lying to Congress? I mean, we could go back more recently to things like the Gulf of Tonkin resolution and other presidential directives that have driven us into war that turned out to be fabrications.
Correct. You're absolutely right. I'm not sure at the time, because I wasn't in Congress, how the extent to which people understood that the Gulf of Tonkin was false. At the time, I don't believe so. At the time, I don't know when they realized that, and I don't. But it's inexcusable.
Mm-hmm.
That should have been addressed. And what also should have been addressed was President Nixon's illegal and secret bombing of Cambodia. He also deceived Congress by giving a false set of books saying that we were not bombing Cambodia, we were bombing in Vietnam. And so there was another deception of the Congress there. But the House Judiciary Committee, and I proposed an article of impeachment in that respect, but the House Judiciary Committee thought that it would look too political, and so they did not support it. I guess what's happened is, though, that the failure to act vis-a-vis Lyndon Johnson, the failure to act against Nixon, had led us to George Bush directly. And that's the problem. That's why it's so important to say, enough is enough. No more. This is a line that can't be crossed anymore. War is too horrific, too costly, too dangerous, too harmful, and it can't be entered into on a basis of lies.
What do you see as the responsibility of Congress in this, as the body that was actually lied to?
Well, Congress should be calling for a special prosecutor. I think that has to be done by somebody like Patrick Fitzgerald, who acted, I think, in a fair and responsible and totally professional way. That's what we need here. We need someone who's independent of the Justice Department, independent of political considerations, has the confidence and respect of the country to examine it. And the issue is not only with regard to the war. That's extremely serious, and we're still paying a price for that. But we also have the issue of the illegal wiretaps. Mm-hmm. I mean, President Bush here has stated on over 40 occasions that he ignored the requirements of the law then in effect with regard to foreign surveillance wiretapping. And he's admitted it. So the question is, does the law apply and should it apply? And that's, again, something a special prosecutor ought to look at. We looked at, again, the possible defenses, and we don't think they apply. But that, again, needs to be reviewed. And then, of course, you have the issue of the torture and mistreatment of the detainees. It's a federal crime to torture people. It is a federal crime. Well, if we say that we take torture so seriously, then someone ought to look at it and examine it. And the president has said, well, he had the advice of counsel, told him that it wasn't torture. But that's a very poor and lame excuse, because the fact is they started the enhanced investigations before they ever had a written opinion from counsel. They so narrowed the circumstances in which the lawyer wrote the opinion. You know, the opinions weren't really open to broad scrutiny the way they normally are in the Justice Department before they're written. And on their face, the lawyer's memos were nonsense. One of my favorite examples is John Yoo, who is right. A graduate of Harvard Law School and is a law professor and should know better, wrote that the definition of torture was going to be, he didn't write that it was going to be narrow, but he narrowed the definition of torture so that almost nothing could fit the definition. And if you look at the definition, he says, well, the pain of torture has to be equivalent to the pain of death. That sounds really serious. Pain of death has to be, like, heavy duty. But if you think about it, no one knows what the pain of death is, because when you die, you can't tell what happened.
Right.
And as Shakespeare even says that. It's a country from whose born no traveler returns. That's in Hamlet. We know that. So if you look at it, it's nonsense. And in fact, to prove that it's nonsense, and it was written with nonsense in mind, you was asked by the Justice Department in a subsequent investigation, well, do you know what the pain of death is? How severe is it? And he said, I think it's very severe, but I don't know. So he's creating a definition that he knows he doesn't even know what it means.
And
we're going to say a president of the United States is entitled to rely on that? No.
And that's only part of it, because it is pretty clear from the evidence, and you detail it all in Cheating Justice, that they clearly knew that they were in violation of certainly the War Crimes Act.
Yes.
Because they took so many steps to backtrack along the way.
Well, they knew they were in trouble under the Anti-Torture Act, which is why they found a lawyer who would write the opinion they wanted him to write. And by the way, you can't rely on a lawyer's opinion unless you rely in good faith. So you can't pick a lawyer to write and tell the lawyer to write a certain opinion and then say, oh, I relied on the lawyer's opinion. That is not a defense.
I mean, it's sort of like Richard Nixon when he said, well, if the president violates the law, it's probably not the law.
That's a different point that they make. The other point, that's a little bit different. Here the point is that, oh, my lawyer told me it was okay. That, we think, is just a completely ridiculous defense under these circumstances. But the other argument that they make is I'm the president, and that's what you said in his memo, that in the end Congress can't stop, the laws can't stop a president from engaging in torture because the president can do whatever he wants to do. And, of course, once you go down that road, we're on the road to military dictatorship, to tyranny, to despotism. That's not what the framers of the Constitution intended. And so it's critical for us to uphold the law, because what's implicit in all of these actions – by President Bush is his notion that he can do what he wants to do, that the ends justify the means, and no one is going to stop him, and no one's got the guts to stop him.
Of course, another aspect of this is that Congress kind of went along with him by going back and changing the War Crimes Act.
That's true. They were very, and just to explain to your listeners, at the very outset, in January 2002, Alberto Gonzalez, who is the president's counsel, talked to the president and wrote him a memo in which they said, we could be prosecuted, in essence, under the War Crimes Act, and so we have to opt out of the Geneva Conventions in order to reduce the possibility of prosecution under the War Crimes Act. So they knew that they could be prosecuted under the War Crimes Act, but their gimmick to avoid prosecution was to opt out of the Geneva Conventions. When the Supreme Court, 4 years later, said the Geneva Conventions apply, there was what we believe nothing less than panic in the White House. We know the president was involved in various meetings to figure out how they avoid prosecution. Congress should have understood what was happening. I think a lot of people, I think part of the problem was that the press didn't focus, the media didn't focus on this issue. Bush and Cheney proposed as part of a Military Commissions Act, a small provision of the Military Commissions Act, changed the War Crimes Act and made it retroactively null. I don't think there's another example in American history where a crime is made retroactively null. And they did that. I think they kind of slipped it under the rug. Nobody was paying too much attention. So, yes, Congress is to blame. The press is to blame. Some of the good government groups were much more concerned with other provisions in the Military Commissions Act, such as habeas corpus and right to counsel, and so they didn't raise this issue. So I think part of the problem is that Congress was uninformed about the consequences, and the other part is that it's not clear even if they knew that they would have taken a different position, because this was just before the 2006 elections, and they might not have wanted to have been attacked for being soft on war, soft on terrorists, soft on whatever.
Given the broader context, is there the ability to prosecute, particularly the torture aspect of this, in a broader international framework?
Well, of course, other countries have their laws, and there is also an international criminal court. And actually, right now, there are two investigations ongoing, one in Poland and one in Spain. And Spain is actually ongoing at this very moment, and the Spanish court just about a month and a half ago asked for additional materials so that he could examine how to proceed. There is always the likelihood of prosecution and accountability by international forums. But you know something? I'm an American, and I'm very proud of our Constitution. I'm proud of this country, and I think it would be horrific if we didn't have the courage and the integrity and the faith in the rule of law to enforce our own laws and instead let other countries enforce our laws. I think that would be just wrong.
Were there reforms that came out of Watergate and that era that should have been more protective in these instances?
Well, probably the most important law that was in effect that could have had an effect here was the special prosecutor statute, which I helped to write with then the chair of the House Judiciary Committee, Peter Rodino. And that law would have triggered the creation of a special prosecutor when there was serious evidence of criminal conduct. So it wouldn't have been up to the president. It wouldn't have been up to the attorney general. It would have been up to the courts enforcing the statute to proceed. And, you know, the problem was we had some very bad experiences under that statute, particularly with Kenneth Starr, who turned it into a kind of a ridiculous witch hunt. But the statute itself, the purpose of the statute, was very important and very clear. And that was to ensure that whenever there's a presidential crime or crime among the very top people of government, that there is a mechanism outside of politics to enforce the law.
Do you seriously...
That statute, by the way, was not reenacted, and so it's not on the books anymore.
Right. Do you think that, realistically speaking, that there's any chance of any of this prosecution being brought to bear?
You know, when I was elected to Congress in 1972, was it realistic to think that Richard Nixon was going to be held accountable for Watergate? Absolutely not. You know, I just think of some examples in our history in the United States and then in world history. Pinochet, Augusto Pinochet, was the dictator of Chile. He was responsible for disappearances and murders of people, and he was a terrible tyrant. And ultimately, it was because of international efforts, primarily in Spain again, to bring him to justice. Spain asked for his extradition from England, and that almost happened, except that he was sent back to Chile on account of his being sick. But that triggered efforts in Chile, and after 27 years, criminal prosecutions were brought against Pinochet. He died before they were completed, but this is a man who felt the hot breath of justice on his neck. And if we just look in the United States during the Civil Rights era, in the early 60s, later 60s, there were many murders of prominent civil rights leaders and others that were never solved. But people didn't give up, and ultimately many of those cases were solved, and murder cases were brought many years later in the 90s. So, yes, at the time in the 60s, who would have thought that everybody could be brought to justice? But in many cases, because people didn't give up, they were. So when it comes to murder, when it comes to torture, there are no statutes of limitations on those crimes, and there are no statutes of limitations on torture, particularly torture, which creates a risk of death. And so these crimes can be prosecuted throughout the lifetimes of the top Bush officials who were engaged in this. And I don't give up hope that a serious prosecutor, a fair prosecutor, will look at this. And it may be that it will take actions in a foreign country, the disclosure of the information in a foreign country. Maybe it will come about because more of these documents will be revealed. Remember, we still don't know exactly why Bush ever went to war in Iraq. We don't know what the reasons for it. You know, we can speculate, but exactly what he knew and when he knew it, we don't 100% know. Well, so at some point, more information will come out. At some point, foreign countries will act. These could all be triggers for a reform, for change, for justice.
Elizabeth Holtzman, the book is Cheating Justice, How Bush and Cheney Attacked the Rule of Law and Plotted to Avoid Prosecution, and What We Can Do About It. Elizabeth, I thank you so much for spending time with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.